Support comes from USC Online, providing exceptional online graduate programs, certificates, and upskilling for current and aspiring professionals. Explore your graduate options today with the University of Southern California at online.usc.edu.
From KCRW, I'm Kim Masters, and this is The Business. Parasite has already made history as the first Korean movie nominated for Oscar. Director Bong Joon-ho is pleased, of course, but he hasn't forgotten the harsh words that his six-year-old son said to him during a set visit years ago.
He watched me work and then just quietly came to me and whispered into my ear,
"Daddy, you look so stupid." And then, why, son? And then, "You keep repeating same thing again, again, and again. You look very stupid."
Fortunately, Bong Joon-ho bounced back from that scathing appraisal. Now Parasite is in Oscar contention in six categories, including Best Picture, Best Director, and Best Original Screenplay. Director Bong tells us about clashing with Harvey Weinstein over cuts to his 2013 film, Snowpiercer, and explains why that led him to make Okja for Netflix, even though he prefers to watch films in theaters. And he shares his thinking behind the planned Parasite TV series. But first on the news banter, major drama after Oprah backs out of a doc on Russell Simmons. Stick around, it's The Business from KCRW. I am joined by my buddy in banter, Matt Bellany of The Hollywood Reporter. Hello, Matt.
Hi there.
So, Matt, as we are speaking, this documentary about the alleged pattern of rape by hip-hop mogul Russell Simmons has not yet had its premiere at the Sundance Film Festival. That's coming up soon, but it hasn't happened yet. However, there's been enormous controversy around this film. It's really a series of unfortunate events on, I think, several levels. First of all, Oprah Winfrey was going to back this film. It was going to be part of her deal with Apple. And she then pulled out. And when she pulled out, she said she had creative issues with the project, but she believed all of the accusers. And that was where it stood. Now, Oprah Winfrey had faced a lot of backlash for supporting the Michael Jackson series. And there was a strong element in the Black community who felt this was a betrayal of a successful Black man. Actually, there was a lot of noise on Twitter with a snake emoji that Oprah Winfrey has betrayed basically her people. Some people thought maybe this was Russell Simmons pressuring her or her reacting to this pressure from people who were denouncing her over the Michael Jackson documentary. But the point is, she stressed at first that she believed the women, and then her story started to shift a bit.
Yeah, and she has come out a little bit more strongly since those initial statements about not being entirely comfortable with the content of the documentary. And the question is why. You know, something about this did not sit well with her, and she decided not to put the full force of her brand behind it. But she is smart enough to know that this is going to cause outrage and cause a big PR backlash. And that's exactly what has happened.
Yeah, I mean, she may be smart, but I don't feel like this was her best moment at all from a PR standpoint, because as this backlash to, like, why is she pulling out of the project and should she have pulled out of the project started to grow, she somewhat shifted her story. And having initially stressed that she believed the women, she then started to say someone she knows, she didn't say who, had identified some inconsistencies, didn't say what, for one of the accusers, Drew Dixon. And as Melissa Silverstein, a founder of Women and Hollywood, said in our publication, "Do you support Drew or do you not? Think how hard it is going to be for women, particularly women of color, to come forward next time when they have been thrown under the bus by none other than Oprah." And that is harsh. But the appearance of starting to question the account of an accuser, and then in an interview on CBS, I think her friend Gayle King raised this thing about also it was a question of the context of the time, which prompted some of the accusers to say, was there a time when rape was okay? Because Russell Simmons is accused of multiple rapes, including in a story that I wrote. And let me just go back to what I think is an important thing as the questioning of Drew Dixon begins, which is her story was broken in the New York Times, a 3,000 plus word story. And you know from our own experience, Matt, how these stories have to be vetted.
Yes, I agree. And the only caveat I would say is that if you are Oprah Winfrey and you have the power of her brand and her empire behind you, Maybe you want to be extra, extra, extra confident in whatever you're putting the power of that brand behind. And if you have any reservation, you don't do it.
Maybe not. Maybe the timing on that would have been better before, but I feel bad for the women in the film because this puts them in a situation where they don't want to necessarily take on Oprah. They don't necessarily want to take on the film. It's a very unfortunate situation. But let me pivot to another whole story in the business right now, which, of course, is a perennial for us, Netflix. Netflix announced that it had 20% subscriber growth despite increasing competition, but that has not stopped people from being very skeptical about whether they can sustain this.
Yeah, and if you look at the numbers, Netflix actually missed its subscriber forecast for the U.S. by a pretty healthy margin. So the U.S. growth is slowing significantly, and the overseas growth is really what's carrying Netflix right now. And you can argue whether that's a strong portrait or a less strong portrait of the business. But what's really happening here is there's competition in the U.S. You saw Disney launch its streaming service in the last quarter. You see NBC Universal launching theirs next quarter. Warner Media is launching theirs. Apple is in the game. All of these new competitors in the U.S. are really giving Netflix a run for their money. Now, they have so much of a head start in this world. So I don't think anyone is saying Netflix is going to lose their subscriber base significantly. But competition matters, and it really, really puts some pressure on a business that has really operated on its own for the most part.
Meanwhile, Netflix to me, and I think to you, looks defensive and a bit strange with a new system for measuring viewership. You know, they're not transparent. We've talked about that many times. They used to base their viewership counts on 70% of the first episode of a show, which is imperfect, you know, but 70%, it shows that you were there for a good portion and a decent shot you went to the next one. Now they're basing it on watching 2 minutes. And I'm sorry, that just pumps up the numbers like crazy. It dramatically expands how many viewers they claim to have had. And I gotta say, if I were like, you know, they're touting The Witcher or other shows as these are the big shows. If I were making those shows, I would be bugged because I would feel like, now you're making something that is really a hit sound like maybe it's kind of a fake hit.
Oh, this is a joke. I mean, I have not talked to a single person who thinks that this is a positive other than for goosing these numbers. And what Netflix says is that they're aligning themselves more with what the YouTubes of the world do, which is that they try to gauge someone making an affirmative choice to watch a video. But YouTube is not necessarily a premium environment like Netflix purports to be. And if I'm working with the kind of creators that Netflix is, I want those people to have confidence that when I say 20 million people watch their show, it's not 20 million people who saw the icon come up on their interface and said, oh, I know that actor, let's try it out. And after 2 minutes said, ugh, I don't like this, and moved on. Like, that's not valuable.
Yeah, I know. And to my earlier point, a person very involved with one of their higher profile shows emailed me after they made this decision and said, I want you to know my show is really a hit. And like I said, I felt a little bad for him.
Yeah. I mean, as much as you can feel bad for people who are
exactly
getting paid a lot of money to make shows on Netflix, but it does matter. This is these people's life work they are putting out there. And to not have any transparency on who is actually consuming it is really, really frustrating for a lot of people.
For a lot of people, for a lot of reasons, especially I think with a writer's strike looming, I don't know if I would make this an issue. Thank you, Matt.
Thank you.
That's Matt Bellany, editorial director of The Hollywood Reporter. The South Korean film Parasite started building awards buzz with its debut last year at the Cannes Film Festival, where it became the first Korean film to win the Palme d'Or. At the Golden Globes, Bong Joon-ho won in the foreign language category. He gave a memorable acceptance speech with the help of his translator.
Once you overcome the one-inch-tall barrier of subtitles, you will be introduced to so many more amazing films.
Parasite tells the tale of two families, the wealthy Parks and the poor but enterprising Kims. When the Kims' college-aged son lands a promising job as a tutor for the Parks, he soon figures out ways to con the Parks into giving jobs to other members of his family without actually disclosing that they're related to him. The movie contrasts the cramped underground basement where the Kims live with the fabulous ultra-modern home of the Park family, though that seemingly immaculate and airy house holds some dark secrets. When director Bong joined us in the studio with his translator, Sharon Choi, I asked him about his face-off with Harvey Weinstein, who wanted to carve up Bong's 2013 film, Snowpiercer.
Yeah, actually they cut 25 minutes. So okay. There was his version.
And with his version, they held a test screening at Paramus, New Jersey.
And it played badly, and you were happy, right?
And thankfully, with Snowpiercer, it was in the contract that I could hold another test screening with my director's cut. So we screened my director's cut at Pasadena, and the score was much higher.
Right, but Harvey still didn't really relent. And there was a story particularly that I loved that I read where he wanted to cut a scene where one of the guards guts a fish to terrify the passengers, I think. And so you had a very particular way. Tell me how that was a great story.
So usually I don't really lie, but instinctively to protect the shot, I had to come up with a lie. The DP and I really loved that scene with the big fish. So I told him that there's a personal story behind it, that my father was a fisherman, and that's why you have to keep it.
Actually, my father was the professor.
He was a graphics designer.
Yeah, graphic designer.
My father was too. That
really?
Common.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. And then...
So he's, you know, my father suddenly became a fisherman. And when Harvey Weinstein heard that, he was like, yes, family is so important. You should have told me before, and told the editor to not touch that shot.
Well done. Good lie.
So everything with the Weinstein company, you know, it's all in the past. I've forgotten a lot of it.
Blocked it out.
At this point, it all feels like a distant memory. But at the time, my producer gave me the book Down and Dirty Pictures,
right,
which deals
Peter
with the...
Biskin's book.
Yeah,
yes.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which
yeah.
deals with the history of American indie cinema. And, you know, it mentions that Harvey Weinstein's nickname is, you know, Scissorhands. And it talked a lot about the conflicts he had with directors regarding the final edits. So I was already prepared.
I mean, this was a breakthrough film for you here. You know, Harvey was, it's 2013, he was not as powerful as he had been, but still standing up to him, that was, I mean, did you just feel like, I don't care, this is my picture and I'm going to stand up to this guy?
So of course, you know, Harvey Weinstein was a powerful figure in the American film industry, and he's distributed a lot of films. But for me, my films have always been a director's cut. I couldn't even imagine how it couldn't be a director's cut. So I had to use all these ways to make sure that I endure that process. So at the time, the investment company CJ and the actors Tilda Swinton and John Hurt were very supportive of me. And so the way that the situation played out, the film ended up going over to Radius TWC.
Right, which they didn't release it because of the conflict. I guess they thought they were punishing you, but this didn't really punish
you. But for me, it was triumph for me.
Right, yeah. It was a win.
For them, it was punishing.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, and so Tom Quinn from Radius TWC ended up, you know, founding Neon, which is the distributor of Parasite. So the relationship continued on.
Ah, the circle continued. Mm-hmm. The Snowpiercer TV show suddenly is finally a thing after all kinds of torture. There was a whole thing shot and scrapped. Do you have anything to do with it?
I'm actually so-called EP.
Okay, so-called.
Just once I visited the set in Vancouver.
And I visited the train set. That's quite different from the original film. I read the script as well. And compared to the movie, the plot is more complicated, has much more layers. So I'm very excited to see.
Is it the version that you visited that's going to air? Because they changed everything.
So I visited the set much later on. Everything that I saw will end up in the show.
Okay. I also read that one of the reasons you went to Netflix with Okja was because they gave you so much control, total control.
Yeah. So from the beginning, they gave me the 100% of creative control, including...
The rating.
Yeah.
The R rating.
Yeah. It means I can shoot everything inside the slaughterhouse things. And also they gave me the director's final cut, which is so great.
And throughout the entire process, they were very supportive and they gave me a lot of freedom. Other studios were very concerned about the slaughterhouse sequences and told me that they prefer if we don't shoot it. But Netflix was the only studio that was very supportive for the entire thing.
And also, you know, some indie studios, they love the script and they don't care the slaughterhouses. But for them, the budget was too big.
The budget was too big,
because of visual effect, it was over 55 million.
So their budget limit was 30 to 35 million.
Right. And Netflix went much higher, as they just did with The Irishman, a movie that nobody else was going to make at that number. I mean, having done it, you know, we're always talking to directors, this theatrical experience, many want it. Some say, I would rather have more people just have the opportunity to see my film. Having done it both ways, what do you think?
So when we were shooting Okja, the cinematographer Darius Kanji and I, we always shot for the big screen. We always tried to create cinematic images, and we hoped that it would be screened on a big theater as much as possible. But at the time, Netflix was pretty strict with their policy, so it wasn't easy. Their policy was, if it's on the screen, even just one screen, they need to start streaming the film. But these days, with Marriage Story, Irishman, and The Two Popes, they're guaranteeing like a month theatrical window for those films, and it's great to see them being more flexible. And with The Irishman, I actually watched it in a theater in Korea.
Yes, but no, you know what I mean? They're doing some, but they can't do that much because the theaters won't have them. So you get something. I wonder with an auteur filmmaker, some people hate that word, auteur filmmaker, but I think it means something. People know what it means. I wonder whether they, you know, they look at the experience that Scorsese had and say, well, that's not a full theatrical release, but it's enough for me. Or do they say, wow, even Marty Scorsese couldn't get the full thing. Maybe I just will not go to Netflix.
Scorsese께서 뭐.
So even Scorsese was worried that people would watch The Irishman on their phones, and I totally understand what he was feeling. Of course, Netflix is becoming relatively better compared to when they did Okja, but I hope that they're able to be more flexible with the theater chains and cooperate to ensure that the film plays longer on more screens.
Yes.
I'm a huge DVD and Blu-ray collector, and yeah, one-third of my Blu-ray and DVDs is Criterion collections. But now they also start the streaming service, the Criterion channel.
So all the Blu-rays I have are now available on the streaming service. And I think streaming itself, we can't go back to the day when there weren't any streaming services. It's inevitable since even Criterion is offering that service. But I really do hope that we still have a thriving Blu-ray industry, and also the theaters and all the different elements of this film industry, that everyone can cooperate so that we can all coexist.
It feels now like we're a bit stuck, but maybe.
But definitely the theater is the best.
Yes, that's
for
the
me,
preference.
The, 만드는 사람 입장에서 더더.
As a filmmaker, it's the best because it's the only place the audience can't press the stop button.
I have to admit, I may have paused during The Irishman. Coming up after a short break, Parasite director Bong Joon-ho tells us about a mystery from the film that he intends to solve in HBO's upcoming Parasite TV series. You're listening to The Business from KCRW.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
This is The Business, and I'm Kim Masters. We're talking to Bong Joon-ho, director of the South Korean film Parasite, which has 6 Oscar nominations, including Best Picture and Best International Film. No foreign language film has ever won Best Picture yet. Parasite has already made history, becoming the first Asian movie ever to win the top prize of Best Ensemble at the SAG Awards, and the first Korean film to win the Palme d'Or at the Cannes Film Festival. Parasite's had a big year after taking shape in director Bong's mind for a long time.
So all my projects tend to overlap. With Parasite, I first came up with the idea in 2013 during the post-production of Snowpiercer. And I signed the contract with the production company to work on this project in 2015 during Okja. So Parasite was never a reaction to my experience with Okja or Snowpiercer. I just followed the story, and that's how my projects lined up.
And the financer is CJ, the Korean company who already worked with me in The Mother and Snowpiercer and Memories of Murder.
So, 그들은 뭐 항상 저를
And CJ is always, you know, fully supportive of my works. And because Parasite is not a big budget project, much less compared to Okja, the entire financing process and figuring out the budget was very peaceful and smooth.
We like that when it's peaceful and smooth.
Peaceful.
I was amazed about the number of visual effects shots, 480 visual effects shots. And you said that we can never feel that in the movie. It's invisible. Yeah. They're invisible.
Very invisible VFX. It's all because of the set.
So because we built all the sets and even with the rich house, the second floor exterior that was added through visual effects and the bunker and the second floor were all built on separate sound stages and the alleyway would be a location and the door and the walls would be a set that we built. So we used a lot of visual effects to combine all those separate locations. So it wasn't as complicated as, you know, creatures and like Okja. It was much simpler, but there were many shots.
There was a three puppies in the movie. Yeah? Mm-hmm. Two of them was visually packed puppy.
They're not real puppies.
Kidding. Sorry.
Joking. Okay. They were puppies. They were actual puppies. I was going to say.
재미없는 농담 미안하다고 했죠.
I was like, after Lion King, who knows?
Sorry for the boring joke.
It's okay. We'll take all the jokes, boring or otherwise. You actually were a tutor for a really rich family.
Yeah, when I was in university.
And somewhat fraudulently, if I remember the story correctly, because you were a math tutor and you were bad at math.
Yeah, and I fired.
You got fired? Oh, I didn't know that part.
After 2 months.
Oh, boy. So that worked out a little differently. So the Korean film industry is the fourth in the world.
Yeah.
Although in population, Korea is 28th in the world.
It's a small peninsula, small country, but very
passionate.
Yeah. 인구 밀도가 높죠.
The population density is very high.
영화를 되게 좋아해요.
And people and love films.
그리고
love
멀티플렉스 체인이 되게 가장 그
And the multiplex chains they are very deeply into the even the residential areas. We never have to drive that far to go to a theater. They're always nearby.
So when last summer when Parasite released in South Korea, the number of screen was almost 2,000.
It's like an American...
Yeah, it's quite a wide release.
It's a very wide release. Yeah. Did you think, well, this is going to be a huge hit? Or did you think people are going to not know what to make of it? Or did you expect a particular reaction?
So when I first wrote the script, my wife and I were very happy with it, but we knew that this was a strange film. And so when I took the script to the financiers, I was like, I know that this is strange, so I understand if you say no, but just let me know as soon as possible whether or not you're going to greenlight this because I need to go to other people. But they were very willing and took it on. But I always just thought that it would be great to just break even with this film because I knew how strange it was. I had no other goals. My only goal was to just finish it safely. My job as a filmmaker essentially ended at March when I finished editing the film. The film hasn't changed at all, but so many things have happened afterwards. I'm trying my best to just enjoy the entire process.
I feel like you're on a Snowpiercer train going around the awards season rounds.
그 오스카 레이스?
I had no idea that this Oscar race and the awards campaign would be this long and intense because it's my first time going through it.
From Telluride. It's Telluride 한 2년 전 같아, 지금 막.
You're right. It starts in late August, I guess.
Yeah.
It feels like it happened 2 years ago.
I was wondering, can you possibly be interviewed to death? Is that possible?
지금은 막 오히려 그 캠페인이나
Right now, I feel very comfortable and great because we're doing an interview about interviews. It's very meta, talking about being interviewed for Telluride.
Yes, it is. So your directing style, you don't film coverage. You don't film from many angles and try to put it together. You have it in your mind and you shoot it exactly that way. It's not that common, I don't think. And it must probably save time and money, I would think.
그게 왜 그렇게 됐는지 모르겠어요. 내가 뭐 무슨 대단한 결정.
So I don't exactly know why it wasn't as if I made this big decision to work like that. I think it comes from when I was working on short films, I had to get the money myself. And at the time, film was very expensive. And I think the habit came out of just having to find the money myself.
When I was on set of Snowpiercer, Mr. John Hurt, I miss him so much. He told me, Bong, your style is Hitchcockian and you really strongly follow your own storyboard. and I love it, John Hurt, he said. And 그 말 들었을 때 되게 기뻤었어요.
I was very happy to hear that.
Yes, I would think that for the actors, not doing the same thing over and over and over.
Yeah.
Because if you're ever on a film set, you're like, again, you're like, please. I'm not a director, so sometimes I've been on film sets thinking, that looked fine to me. Why are we doing that again?
And in the editing room, we use take one or take two.
Right.
When my son, now he's 24 years old, but when he was six, when he was on set, on my set, he watching... 나 일하는 걸 이렇게 보다가 싹
You know, he watched me work and then just quietly came to me and whispered into my ear.
Daddy, you look so stupid. And then, why, son? And then, you keep repeating same thing again and again. You look very stupid. And I said, no, everything is very delicately different. And he said, no, it's all same. You fool, stupid. And then he ran away.
I should think he would run away. Talking like that to his daddy. But I feel for him. I do. I understand. I'm like the six-year-old saying, again, why? So you were doing a Parasite. Well, Adam McKay is doing a series,
which
seems sort of odd. Like, we just saw it. I'm sure people will be very interested in it. But how did that come to be?
So I already have this idea from when I first started writing the script, because aside from the 120 pages of the script that you see in the completed film, there were so many hidden stories that I wasn't able to convey. For example, you know, when the original housekeeper comes back, her eyes are swollen and the film never explains why, but you know that something happened to her. So, I wanted to expand this story into a six-hour movie or a limited series and not be limited by the two-hour running time of films. So it's not a prequel or a sequel and definitely not a remake. I want to develop the story into a new format so that people who have watched this film can still be surprised.
그리고 아담 맥케이의 이제 그 빅쇼트나 바이스에 나오는 되게 직접적인
And with Adam McKay, I really enjoyed his very direct and aggressive humor in Big Short and Vice. And so I thought with this story, he could really deal with the economic crisis and, you know, the working class issues that are going on in the States
right man for the
with
job.
Humor.
Mm-hmm. You do the storyboarding for your films. I read and I saw a picture of it one. You put it together like a book. I mean, these are very specific with the dialogue and the... Do you ever plan... I don't know if anybody's published any of that or wants to.
So it was already published in Korea and Taiwan. In France, it's going to come out with the Blu-ray. And for the US, we already, you know, have the contract. It's going to be published into a separate book. I'm very happy, but also embarrassed. My drawings aren't as beautiful as those by Fellini or Kurosawa. They just look like children's comics. But it will be fun to compare the sketches with the film because it's very similar to the actual shots.
So do you have storyboards ready for the next film?
So I don't have a storyboard yet. I've been drawing strange sketches here and there. I'm working on two projects very much in the early stages. Right now I'm just accumulating fragments of ideas. I don't know how, you know, they'll all form into one project. I'll need time to do that. And that's why I want March to come so soon
so that I can return
to my actual job. Right now I'm so busy with the campaign.
Yeah, it'll be done in February. It was early Oscars this year. So.
금년에 빨라서 다행인 것 같아요.
I'm glad it's sooner this year.
A lot of people aren't, but you are, definitely. Mm-hmm. I'm not so sorry myself. Bong Joon-ho is the director of the six-time Oscar-nominated film Parasite. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you.
And thank you to Sharon Choi, his translator. Thank you so much, Sharon.
Thank you.
And that's The Business. Caitlin Parker produced and edited today's program, and Paul Smith mixed the show. You can stream The Business as well as other great KCRW podcasts on the KCRW app. I'm Kim Masters. We'll see you next week on The Business.